You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hello, and welcome to another fabulous episode of Dear Multi-Hyphenate. I'm your host, Michael Kushner, and I took about 2 weeks off of releasing a new episode, so forgive me for keeping you waiting. Gabe Crawford, my social media extraordinaire, kept you all satiated with TBT posts, throwback posts of some incredible words of wisdom from my previous guests. So I'm so thankful for Gabe. As I finished writing the first draft, the rough draft of my book, my upcoming book, How to Be a Multi-Hyphenate in the Theater Business, Conversations, Advice, and Tips from Dear Multi-Hyphenate. That's right, my podcast is becoming a book. Well, part of my podcast is becoming a book, but there are lots of conversations that are going to be transformed into lessons and exploring and diving deeper into grander topics, and it's going to be a really cool exploration into the theater multi-hyphenate experience. And I have 112 artists that I've interviewed, some on the podcast, some not on the podcast, and it's a multi-hyphenate experience in itself, because they wanted color. They wanted color and black and white images, but they wanted 50 images of mine. They wanted conversations from the podcast and, you know, new data and research. So it's a combination. It's exactly what the multi-hyphenate experience is. It's each hyphen affecting the other. So I'm really proud of the structure, and I'm really proud of what it is. So now I just await the feedback and what I need to fix, and I hope they like it. Oh, the life of an artist, just constantly wanting to please people, right? But what I hope will please you is this incredible episode featuring Poses Jason Rodriguez. This is an incredible episode as we talk about things like access and agencies and working relationships and representation for artists and delegating. It's a really great episode. Jason Rodriguez is the unequivocal face of voguing for an entirely new generation of dancers and dance enthusiasts. He starred for 3 seasons as Lamar in Ryan Murphy's Emmy and Golden Globe Award nominated television series Pose, where he also shared his expertise with the cast as movement coach and choreographer. Born and raised in Washington Heights, New York City, Jason's name has become synonymous with the art form of voguing. Jason's masterful embodiment of the art form has been noted by countless dance critics and journalists, including the New York Times, who described how his radiating limbs transform his torso into a solid stretch of sinew and muscle, making him at once tense, velvety, and effortless. Jason has taught Vogue across the U.S. and the world, and currently teaches at various schools and institutions throughout New York City. In addition to Pose, Jason has been seen on Baz Luhrmann's The Get Down on Netflix, Saturday Church, and on HBO's The Deuce. I really hope you enjoy this episode.
So as always, I start with a quote just to bring in the moment, bring us in. Yes, Jason is, I see him on video, and he's giving me a movement of bringing in the energy, calling the spirits. And that's exactly what the movement. We love it. We love it. Movement based. If you can only see what's happening. And this quote is, "She doesn't get to dictate my reality. I do." And that's said by Candy on Pose, which we love so much. And I am so excited to welcome my new friend, Jason Rodriguez. Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
Oh, it's going well. I have a tension headache for the gods.
Yeah.
And I'm ready. And that just means that I'm gay and working.
Wow. What the most beautiful pluses you can have next to each other.
Right? Exactly. It's like a tension headache that comes out of being proactive. Like, how wonderful is that?
Life.
How's your morning? What does that quote mean to you? Talk to me about everything.
Yeah, I mean, when I hear a quote like that, I feel like I expand it and take identity and the gender out of it. And just what really hits me is the nobody is going to dictate my moves, my decisions, my sense, who I am, what I'm going to do, how I want to do it. So I love that quote, and just expand it just to not allow anybody to make your decisions for you because they can't.
I love that so much. So under multi-hyphenate, we talk about being multi-hyphenates, and the audience is made primarily of multi-hyphenates or people that have heard of the word and don't know what it is and are learning that they can take an idea and have the agency to be able to create something and start something new. And it doesn't make them any less of a costume designer or any less of an actor or any less of a director if they continue their outreach and their exploration process. So what I say multi-hyphenate is an artist who has multiple proficiencies that cross-pollinate to help flourish professional capabilities. So basically, what that means is that I do a lot of shit, and all the shit that I do helps the other thing exist. So I'm an actor, photographer, producer, writer, podcaster, but all of the things that I do helps. My photography helps my podcasting. My podcasting helps my performance. My performance helps my writing. So I want to know, what is multi-hyphenating to you, and what are your hyphens?
Wow. First of all, I love that word. When I first saw it in an email, I was like, it's got to be the cousin to multifaceted, because that's the word that I carry with me, especially being an artist. Not given access specifically to structures of industries that I wanted to be a part of, or not even industries, of just programs that I wanted to learn from. So I tried being an actor, tried for a conservatory after high school, after doing all this Shakespeare, all this Midsummer's Night Dream, Macbeth, or the play that should not be named. And then I find myself like, I want to continue this. This makes me feel good. I still don't even know what it means to be gay or queer, but this creative outlet is allowing me to speak, to express, to actually have a voice, to not feel silenced because of my indifference. And then went to a conservatory and they were like, no.
Right.
Then carried along, I was like, okay, maybe I'll try to be a journalist. Maybe I can be the Latinx Carrie Bradshaw. That's a thing, right? Sat in those classes. I was like, nope. Tried twice for Conservatory of Dance. Was told no two more times.
Wow.
So when you say multi, I feel that's me. I just, anything that was open to me and available, I was there. So no, I was not able to be part of a conservatory, but they allowed me to take classes, so I was still able to learn how to dance. I majored as arts management, which sadly that you really teach on the job, but they still give you tools and creative, you know, thoughts and ideas to take from, and I learned from that. Also, again, from acting, which was my first outlet, learning how to read Shakespeare, learning how to act in Shakespearean plays, I took from that. So when you come from a place without privilege and access, I feel like you have no choice but to be multi or just fall to the ground. So I take from all my experiences and all the moments that allow me to be and learn and exist.
I'm so thrilled that you said that, because my book, How to Be a Multi-Hyphenate in the Theater Business, Conversations, Advice, and Tips from Dear Multi-Hyphenate, is coming out. And what I'm finding,
congratulations.
Thank you so much. What I'm finding the book to be about is access. And so my friends listening, folks listening, I did not pay Jason to say access, okay? But the fact that you said that makes me so happy, because multi-hyphenating is about access. Mm. It is about access for us in the industry to create our own opportunities, but it is our responsibility as well to create access for others. Mm. Because we are the ones that are creating opportunities for employment, for inclusion, for delegating tasks to other people, to broadening teams. So then it's our responsibility to then find those people and create accessibility into the industry, because we know both, like, accessibility in this industry is extremely tough. Like, we have, you know, programs telling us no. We have, you know, apprenticeships and internships are expensive or they don't pay. And there's a white boys club to this industry. Mm. And accessibility is so, so important for queer artists, for trans, for BIPOC artists, because those are the stories that need to be told. And yeah. And I think, and I say this often, but multi-hyphenating, I think, is extremely important to queer, BIPOC, trans artists, women, because those stories are not centered yet. And the ones that are centering them are those artists. And in order to do so, we have to take it upon ourselves to tell those stories.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, I feel like my first moment of understanding what representation meant was already tied to you have to create access. I didn't, you know, my first season of Pose, I was just there. I feel like all of us, we have no idea what was created before it was premiered. So we were just working, doing the work, enjoying each other's company, enjoying each other's creativity, you know, no other set would be like a set like Pose, with so much cast and crew and writers and directors being Black, being brown, people of color, trans, queer. I know I'll never find something like that. So for me, it's like the untouchable jewel I hug and I'm so grateful for every day. So then it wasn't towards afterwards, you know, receiving messages from people. My parents are from Dominican Republic. So receiving messages from queer individuals from Dominican Republic or from Argentina or for Colombia, because I identify as Latinx. So my Latinx people from Latinx countries relate to me. They see me on screen and they're like, oh wow, like, he's queer, he's Latinx, and he's living his fucking life on that ballroom floor. So, you know, it's a sense of hope. You see someone that looks like you, someone that could be your cousin, your brother, your uncle, and, you know, it's a sense of hope. And so for me, after receiving such, you know, receiving that, I thought my work doesn't end after, you know, I'm a performer, after I'm a dancer, after I'm an actor. I still have a sense to create access in so many places. I'm born and raised from Washington Heights. I have a sense to create access at some point in Washington Heights. And now with my next move with a agency, with my business my business partner, Ricardo Sebastian, that our aim, our mission is not, we're going to make everyone, you know, famous and with money. That is, you know, that's the add-on without having to be added, but it's, we're trying to change the game. We're trying to build a support system for talent when they walk into set, when they go to their jobs, when they do their gigs, their projects, create their production, and they know they have a team behind them that they can relate to, that see them, that understand them, and then it just becomes the work between the talent and the work. Nothing else is in the way.
That's beautiful. I'm obsessed. So thank you. you did the intro for me. You have, yes, an exciting project that is happening, and it's going to change the industry. And that is the new agency that you created, which is Arrangency. And yes, I am so excited to learn more, but also not only learn more of the of your vision, which you just sort of went into, but the actual logistics of creating an agency or creating a business and what it actually takes as you're balancing being a performer, because you are, you know, not only are you a Pose superstar, but you are known as the unequivocal new face of voguing, which is pretty damn fierce. And yes, honey, we love. Yes, touch all this skin, honey.
Honey.
But so those are pretty incredible things to be to have tapped with your identity. So I want to know what was, because this is why I want to know this. I think a lot of artists think that multi-hyphenating is multitasking. And while there is multitasking involved in multi-hyphenating, we are not constantly trying to paint our nails and drink coffee and order through the drive-thru at the same time. We actively switch and we actively delegate between the things. So from 12 to 1, I'm wearing my actor hat. From 1 to 2, I'm wearing my choreographer hat. From 2 to 3. So I want to know, as someone that is a performer and now a creator of an agency, how did it start? What were the beginnings? And how did you sort of delegate the steps and balance all of your proficiencies in your life?
Yeah, so I started working with Ricardo in 2019. At that time, I was pretty much flushing my team because I wasn't having it. And I found myself with Ricardo. We prior met on Instagram and also connected by a makeup artist on Pose. And so there's this project coming that I did with Absolute Vodka for World Pride. They came with me with a certain budget, and I was not, you know, savvy with the ways to scale up. I didn't know what it meant to be in a 360 contract. I didn't know what it meant to negotiate your budget. And then I found Ricardo, Sebastian, pronouns they, them, incredible Latinx, queer, Mexican, just powerhouse when it comes to elevating everything and anything. And so they took this budget and times it by 10. And I was like, wow, yeah. And it wasn't just the results. It was how they got there. So they would check in with me every day, even if there was nothing to talk about, and it still happens. We speak every day in case there's anything that we've missed that has to be talked about, that has to be figured out. And they just do it so effortlessly, so caringly, but still on it. And so after that, I was like, we have to work together. Like, please be my manager. Let us continue working. And at that beginning, also, they were asking me about things that I wanted to accomplish. Like, okay, you're on Pose. Okay, you teach classes. You're a movement coach. But what else do you want to do? And I let them know about all the series of things that I want to do. I specifically pinpoint these things after, you know, just being a performer, like where there's space of like, what's next? I felt like I already had to do that because I was declined so many times, thinking my what's next was to be in this conservatory of acting, to be a dancer, to be in a dance company, and none of that happened. So I was already, as an arts manager, I'm like, what's next? Oh, well, I'll dance for as long as I can. I'll do what I can do. And then I would love to open a dance studio in Washington Heights, which is still a thing today. I would love to open a queer, trans-friendly restaurant uptown because a lot of my people are up here. I was raised in spaces, not only restaurants, but nightclubs where Black and brown, queer, trans people would come together. None of that exists anymore. So again, I come from a place of I'm grateful of everything I've received. Now, how can I give back to the place, the streets, the neighborhoods that have raised me? So in 2019, I also let them know I wanted to make an agency, like specifically because of my prior experience with an agency. I was part of a talent agency, part of a management agency, and I just did not feel like I was being propelled 100%. If it's around the time frame of World Pride and you gay and you don't feel prepared, you don't feel propelled on World Pride with the work that you have lined up, then you got to ask some questions.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to leave that on that. And so I don't think any other talent should receive that experience that I have. And I'm a stickler for the experiences I've received. You need to listen, you need to hear about it, but you don't have to experience it. You're going to go through your sets of experience, but let my prior experiences, especially to young queer youth, is to listen to this, take this on, and never let it happen to you, because you already just have the knowledge of it. Mm-hmm. This does not have to happen to you. This is going to embedder you, empower you, mm-hmm. protect you, mm-hmm. you know, raise your confidence. So, so we started in 2019, talked about it. I started a performance house called House of Eon, which there are two different kind of competitive houses in balls. You have a main house like House of Extravaganza, Ninja, La Beja, Mugler, Balenciaga. And then you have Kiki houses, which is more an environment created by the queer youth. So like Louis Vuitton, Juicy Couture. So it's like, it's pretty much two kind of sets of environments, if that makes sense. So you can be part of these two kind of realms of houses. So I have a performance house, which is specifically to take in voguers from ballroom and bring them and give them jobs in professional settings. So any projects, like I did a project with Adidas, anything to teach workshops, or I also do mock balls in universities, which is to bring voguers and set up a mock trial of what a ball looks like. Mm. And yet it's to give these voguers experience, build their resume, you know, receive from me and from Ricardo tools of how to be in a professional setting. Rather than let the professional setting set you. So we try to set them up so they know how to bring their A game in still being themselves. And just build their resume and get them paid. So through my performance house, I take any kind of gig that comes my way and I ask to expand it to then include others. And then from there, we find ourselves into, you know, we've cultivated and raised a couple individuals from House of Eon, giving them gigs, helped them through contracts, taught them how to teach a class. And so we found ourselves already working intimate with talent, with, you know, youth, with building them up. So within this next step is, well, after you've cultivated someone, what is their next step? Like, where do they go from there? So we thought to create this agency. So this is then working one-on-one with individuals, with getting them booked, with if they don't have an infrastructure set up yet on how they make their money or what their day-to-day looks like, we help them with that. So it's hard to say that we kind of stick in just being an agency where we're just on the computer and we're just like looking for bookings and we send you the email and we're like, okay, submit this. It's different because our community does not most of the time have access and information of what it means to submit for a casting. That's the reality.
So your agency almost acts like an incubator.
Mm-hmm. So we're not limiting ourselves. We're not just saying this is what we do, because what if we sign a talent that's like, I have never done this before. So we don't even allow that question to exist. With our set of tools, we're setting you up from beginning to end. So if you need to understand how to submit, if you need to understand how to build your resume, if you need to understand to map out how you make your money, we're going to work on that as well. So we're not just going straight to getting you booked, but we are also investing in preparing you on what it means to get booked, what it means to be on set, and book them as well. So we're taking extra steps because sometimes those steps aren't available to you. They weren't available to me. I felt like as I was on Pose, I was learning. I was just jumping the learning curves of manager, an agent, contract. I was just there. I was learning as I was going. So once again, I've experienced that. Why allow another youth to experience it again? Let me give them that information and then push them forward.
It's a way, it's a success story of failure, right? Mm-hmm. Because you, Jason, experienced failure, you know, and like finding rep that wasn't really working for you, you sort of you took that lesson and went, what am I going to do to fix this? What am I going to do so that I don't experience this again, but also so that younger Jasons don't experience this again? And I think it is why failure is so, so important in our industry, and why, you know, baseball teams, right? Like youth baseball teams, at the end of a game, they are lined up facing each other and they have to walk towards each other and everyone shakes everyone's hand, winner and loser. And I don't understand why we don't do something like that in our industry, because it shows, and you know, whoever they grow up to become, but in that moment, it shows sportsmanship. It shows sportspersonship. And we need that in the industry. We need to understand that failure is a good thing and that we learn from failure. And as long as we shake it off and learn the lesson and keep going, we'll be able, because failure is like a paradox, right? We have to fail in order to not fail.
Mm-hmm.
So like, but more and more the failure becomes more educational and it becomes more informative, and that becomes intuition. And then that becomes just old hat. We know, nope, not doing that because I know that's going to lead to this. Yes, I am going to do that because I know that I learned from this mistake. And, you know, so I just love that you are turning your experience in which you quote unquote failed, or where the experience failed you, and you're turning it into something positive for someone else, which is huge and amazing.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, you pretty much hit the hammer on the nail. But yeah, it was I felt it was the moments of failing. Like I found myself at a bus stop, like after these conservatories denied me, and I was like, should I even be dancing? Like,
wow.
And it's like these It was like, I've never had that many conversations to myself, especially at a young age, because you don't know who you are. So it's like, how do you speak to someone that you don't know? That's what it felt like. I didn't know who I was. And so I'm here like, okay, it literally felt like a decision. Should I keep dancing or not? And I left that bus stop and I told myself, I do want to keep dancing. It feels good. It feels right. I mean, even if I never hit a stage, for me, that hour and a half in class was healing. It was invincibility.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like every day I was learning something new about my body. Every day I learned something new about my body, which entailed too, I was learning something new about myself. My body was receiving new information and new lines and new curves, and it reinforced who I was, because I was like, I have power over my body. I should be able to have power over every part of my life, of every part of myself. Yeah, I feel like without my failures, I would not have succeeded as much as I have today. So I invite them.
On a personal level, I'm just super excited at the aspect of you bringing ball culture. I don't want to say back, because I think that's an uneducated statement, because I'm not aware of, you know, ball culture around Manhattan. So I don't want to say back, but I've been an active audience member of Vivacious, who is a season 6 queen on Drag Race, who comes from ball culture and brings that to all of her drag shows. And it's so electrifying. And she's so funny anyway. I love her. I can listen to her talk for years. But like I think watching, you know, something like Paris is Burning, I sit and I go, wow, if only we still had that. And then, you know, I have Vivacious, and who brings a part of that into the current day life. But what is ball culture like today? And I just want to hear more of your plans to bring it to the forefront again.
Yeah, ballroom is still thriving right now, especially through having two entities of ballroom. So like I was saying prior, Main and Kiki. I would say it's thriving. Just like a good example is Legendary on HBO Max, showing off the competition between houses. I think that's the best representation right now of ballroom, present day ballroom right now, because it's a competition and it uses houses that are present day, you know, actively walking and actively present now. You know, during the pandemic, ballroom did go online for a while, which I thought was a beautiful thing for, you know, people who were teaching and then also competitions happening, because then you had people from different countries battling each other without, you know, having to get a flight to travel somewhere. So I thought that was a beautiful thing. And that helped hold ballroom during the beginnings of the pandemic. And now it's kind of finding its new groove. It's when it comes to balls, it doesn't really go anywhere. It's just if you don't know the person or the who, what, when, where, why of when it's happening, who's hosting it, when, you're just never going to know. So like there's one that happens in Brooklyn at $3 bill. Mm-hmm. It's called OTA, Open to All. And it's like a mini ball that happens every single week as you know, if it doesn't have any conflicts happening X, Y, and Z. So I was actually, it's funny. I was just having a meeting with a potential talent from ballroom yesterday. And, you know, we were just going through our comparisons and our history in ballroom. And mine is, you know, a bit different. I went through House of Ninja and Extravaganza, which is, you know, these main houses known not only in ballroom, but also outside of it. And that's one of the things that I was drawn to, especially at the beginning, being queer. I watched Benny Ninja on America's Next Top Model, and that was my first time seeing a ballroom individual, a queer individual, a Latinx individual, all together on TV. And so this was my introduction to ballroom, was Benny Ninja, seeing how he vogued, how he taught these girls, and he was on national television. I was like, oh, you can do that? Okay. And so, you know, at the beginning of my ballroom stages, I was going to balls. I didn't really walk as much, but I also did a lot of gigs and projects with the houses, which helped me kind of set up my Lamar character for Pose, you know, just being in these houses and practicing my vogue and articulating it. And so I feel like I go to balls now, and it's to look, to search for talent, to be honest, to seek out, wow, this person is an amazing voguer, or their runway is incredible, or this look is to die for. But what else could they do after the ball? What could be their everyday life afterwards? What do they want their everyday life to look like? So I really sometimes go to balls to scout someone I've never experienced before.
That is incredible. And I think that's so fresh and so amazing and beautiful. And I love that you brought up Benny Ninja, because as a top model watcher, I'm thinking, oh my God, yes. Wow. That was so educational and so amazing to watch. And I think, yeah, is Tyra a controversial person? Sure. But the opportunities that she has brought forth, mm-hmm. We can't forget those as well, because mm-hmm. they're, you know, like Benny Ninja and featuring, you know, Sutan on, you know, as Raja, you know, as a man.
Oh my God, that was, I mean, it was the runway for me. I knew Raja was going to win the minute I saw her step out. So yes and yes to Raja. Oh my God.
Exactly.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSMusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Now, there's an interesting thing, because I was watching last night with my boyfriend. We were watching the first episode of the second season of Drag Race Holland. And Fred, the host, made an interesting comment that I was a little, like, turned off by. And he was critiquing a queen for having a wig that looked like you can get it at Walmart and was $20.
Oh, no.
I know. And I felt that was so wrong, because that's not – drag is not about – and ballroom and what we do as a community. I don't partake in drag arts. I am an avid supporter. And but what we do as a community is not about what we spend. Mm. It's about what we create. And I thought that the comment mm-hmm. was so off – it was so off. It was so dated.
Mm, yeah, no, it's about the creation, especially for drag. It's that's why we're watching it. The gag of it, the elevation. So, you know, petty comments will just stay petty comments.
Yes, they will. They will. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's I'm such an admirer of your work, I'm so excited about the work that you're doing, because there are so many different theaters in the theater industry that are incubating shows. And there are certain agencies that are incubating in a specific way. But I am so excited at the prospect of what a Regency is doing.
Thank
and
you.
The type of artists that you are bringing forward, and the way that you are looking for talent, and for queer creators that are listening, how could they communicate with you if they feel that they will that they could add to your roster in a positive way?
Yes, absolutely. If you queer, come this way. So we already started scouting for talent, like, before we went public. So we're closing out our first set of talent, because at the end of the day, we are limited because it's only two of us. So we're at the beginning steps of still building the agency. And then our next steps is hoping to expand. So get a couple more staff, so that way we can continue increasing our list. So for right now, we just actually had an open call for people to submit, and it just closed on Monday. So I apologize, Monday at 12 p.m. But after we then process that open call, and we'll be like inviting people to meet one-on-one virtually, see what they do, who they are, and then meet one-on-ones and see how that goes. And then probably prior to that, so maybe give us maybe a little bit of time, maybe a month or so. Again, we're just like at our beginning steps of two little queer individuals trying to make something happen. And then afterwards, we'll have a second open call. So I would say, you know, follow us on Arrayency on Instagram, ARRAY.GENCY, or also Arrayency.com. That's usually are about us, our mission, who we are. And when we have an open call, that's where we'll post it. So I would say just stay updated on our movement, and also when we have our next open call. And I hope it calls out to you.
I think that's something that I would tell my younger self, that I like to tell younger clients or older, that like whoever needs to hear it. In my photo studio, which is where I'm recording from right now.
Yes, and, I see. The fabulous photos behind you.
You better come here.
Okay.
You better. I want you here.
Town. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Walking distance. Something that I would tell is that these things take time. Finding representation takes time. And I think it is etched in the BFA program, the way that the industry moves, or the way that the people think that the industry moves, and the inaccessibility of the industry, that people think that they have to have rep no matter what. And that it has now become also a social element of being like, oh yeah, my rep, blah, 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 or my rep does this, or like, oh, I'm not. No, it is not a social thing. Sometimes you are able to more times than not, you're able to do better, more work rep less than to be with a representation that doesn't support you or see you.
Yeah. Oh my God. I 100% agree on that. It has to, again, I come from, you know, my neighborhood, my background of just like surviving, making as much as you can from nothing. So if people don't resonate to that, this is not the team for you, and that's okay. But also, you know, it comes from oneself to see yourself and know that, know your worth, set your standard. And that's like one of the biggest things that we're going to be working with our talent is setting their standard and knowing their worth. You need to know how much you're worth, because I know how much you're worth, but you need to know it first. And your worth can or can't include representation, and that's real.
And that's interesting, because I love that you're saying, like, I know your worth. That's why we're meeting with you. That's why we're interested in you. But you have to see your own worth. You have to be able to sell it. And I think access in the industry starts there. That mm-hmm. if you believe in yourself and you believe in the story that you have and your point of view, that's when things start to show up. And that's mm-hmm. when you're willing to listen to the universe and willing to listen to the environment around you, I think that's when we start to download information and start to find our own path. Because, and I write about this in the book, Cynthia Henderson, who is a guest of mine and a professor of mine, she talks about the aesthetic and how it affects our why. And you beautifully mentioned your why without saying this is my why, but about bringing culture to the environment in which you grew up. Mm-hmm. And I loved what you said, but she talks about the aesthetic and how the things that make up our aesthetic is what informs who we are, listening to our environment around us and understanding where we came from, who we've loved and who we've met. And those things are our points of views and our stories. And we have to bring that with us throughout whatever we create and whatever we do.
Right. Yeah. Period. Period with no commas, just another period. But I just wouldn't be who I was without my experiences from where I grew up. So why negate those? They're exactly. good, they're bad, they're ugly, but they have me where I am now. And that's
exactly
the best part of the entire experience is, where do you want to be after that?
Like, right.
Look through your lens, look through your past, look through your history, and remind yourself that it's all in the past. You survived it. You succeeded it. So now what are you going to do with it?
Exactly. Jason Rodriguez, you are an absolute doll.
Thank you. You're a doll yourself. We're just two dolls speaking. Just
two dolls sitting on a shelf, honey.
Yes.
Where can we find you on social media?
Yes, you can find me on Instagram at the Jason A. Rodriguez, and also on Twitter, Jason A. Rodriguez, but there's no Z at the end. It's an X because somebody else got the Z. So yeah, you know, you can follow me, check out what I do as an artist, and then what I'll be doing with a Ragency and everything else that I'm trying to create and make happen. So please, if you'd like help and support me, I would appreciate every ounce of it.
I absolutely will. We absolutely will. And I just wanted to say thank you to Broadway Podcast Network. Thank you so much, Patrick, for engineering this episode. Thank you to Kim for also engineering this episode. And welcome to the Broadway Podcast Network team. Thanks to Alan and Dory and Katie and Yo. You're all amazing. BPN, you are the best. And as always, Follow me on Instagram at TheMichaelKushner or at DermultiHyphenate, and please rate, subscribe, do all of that stuff with your multi-hyphenate. And thank you, everyone. Have a great day. Bye.
Thank y'all. Have a good day. Ciao.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.